Rigi of Vayetze. It's a relatively short aliyah involving the birth of some of the Shvatim and involving the Dudai Ruvain, the flowers, the mandrakes that Ruvain brought for his mother. So the pasuk starts, Vayelech Ruvain bimeik tzir chitim, Vayimtza Dudoyim basada. He found these mandrakes in the field, Vayavei osam aleya imo. He brought them to his mother. And Rachel said to Leah that she wants them. The first has a whole discussion about this. You know, it's going to then go, the conversation is going to go to another level after this. And Rav Hirsch notes that presumably this is not a real transaction of any kind that you see going here. That what the pasuk is going to suggest is if there's a trade of a night with Yaakov for the mandrakes, so it's not really shy if that's really what's happening, but that this represents the closeness of the sisters. This was kind of how they were talking with each other. I guess it's a kind of banter. But in any event, in terms of the flowers themselves, so the idea, the pasuk emphasizes that it was bimei ktsir chitim. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin on Dev Tzaritas that this is to show the shevach of tzaddikim, that they don't get involved in gezel at all. They don't take anything that's not theirs. So it's not 100% clear how it shows that. There's two different ways in Rashi. Rashi and the Gemara over there in Sanhedrin, and Rashi and the Pasuk here. Rashi and the Gemara in Sanhedrin is a little harder to understand. He says something along the lines of how he waited for everyone else to do their harvesting, and then he went in and got whatever was not wanted after everyone else had harvested, that somehow that's what's mashma from the pasuk. But Rashi here on the pasuk says differently, that it was a time of the ksir chitim, so people were interested in chitim, that's what they care about. But the flowers, they don't care about. So he was only willing to take something menahefker. He was only willing to take something that nobody should have any hakpada on. And it shows how even these small issues of gezel that tzaddikim are careful about. So you know, you have to figure out exactly what the chiddush is. But Moshe Feinstein has a ha'ari here that you know, it's a little bit of a surprising comment. Although maybe it's not so surprising because one has that. But one would think that by definition tzaddikim are makbid on mitzvahs. You know, so why do you need a diuk here? Oh, you see that tzaddikim, they don't steal. Tzaddikim, you know, they don't commit crimes. Isn't that wonderful? Just to show the height of their tzidkus. So, of course, one could take a very cynical approach, in that we know that nowadays sometimes there is a perception that one could be a tzaddik and still steal. And therefore, maybe we davka do need to be told that the tzaddikim are makpidim on gezel. It's like the line that's attributed to many people, whoever it was who said it first, that if lo sigzol was a minik, people would be much more machmir about it. You know, that somehow it gets missed. Shaik Zaryeh, they say that when he became the rav in the community, so they said they have a minig there, that the new rav should put the minig in the book of Minhagim. So he wanted to put in the Aseres HaDibros. So they said, you know, for Minhagim. He said, halavai, they should care as much about the Aseres HaDibros as the Minhagim. But there is, I guess, the mentality that it's possible to be a tzaddik and still not care about gezel. So maybe we do need to be told that, by the way, that's part of the definition of a tzaddik. But the Rav Moshe was not so cynical, so he was trying to point out, he assumes that the intent of the Gemara is not that they're not going to steal. Avad, they're not going to steal. But this is a very high madrega of sensitivity, that it's not just a question of intentional stealing. It's a question of going above and beyond to make sure that even any kind of benefit that might come to you shouldn't come from anybody else's property. And that's the sensitivity. And as was pointed out, Reuven was a very young man. Reuven was about six. So the idea is that he's not really an adult who's really making these cheshbonos himself. But because he saw what Yaakov did, he saw what it's like to grow up in Yaakov's house, or to be a child in Yaakov's house. So the overwhelming care that the father showed towards not stealing. You know, we find also from this week's parasha, from elsewhere, that Yaakov is the model not just for abstaining from overt theft, but from showing commitment as a worker. The Rambam quotes this in Mishneh Torah, that we see from the way that Yaakov expresses himself that Poel was obligated to work b'chol kocho. A few years ago we spent some time learning Hilchos Polim, and Yaakov's testimony about himself is a big part of it, that even to the smallest degree, both positively and negatively, so he displayed a very strong sensitivity not to be involved in Gezel. In fact, we'll find that in Parshas Vayishlach also, that when we're told, the Gemara has that shocking statement that Yaakov went back and endangered himself with Esav. He went back, al tachim ketanim, and the Gemara has that line so hard to understand, that you see that tzaddikim chasim amamonim yosim migufam. The tzaddikim are more careful about their property than they are even about their own physical safety. And the explanation given is that shlopashti dein begezel, that their property is kind of a testimony to their honesty, that they're very careful, that they only have that which is legitimately theirs, and therefore it takes on a whole other connotation. So if that's the overwhelming message, so then even a child will understand that even in a more extreme situation, a more extreme sensitivity he's going to display, that's a part of his intuited mindset that he has from his position. Okay, so then the next pasuk has that discussion that Refresh mentioned, Vatomer la hamat kachteches ishi, v'lakaches gamas dudoy b'ni. So not enough, she says, that you already took my husband. So now you want to take my dudoyim also. So Vatomer Rachel achein yishka v'imach alayla taches dudoy v'neich. So okay, fine. So then let's trade. So again, without knowing exactly how serious this conversation is in terms of its literalness, but as Reb Ruchem Levavitz, the Mashgiach from Mir, pointed out, that it seems a little ironic or a little surprising for Leah to accuse Rachel of stealing her husband. I mean, really, between the two of them, who could make a case against who? That who stole Yaakov? That it would seem that Leah inserted herself in between Rachel and Yaakov, and that the taina could be had on her much more than the other direction. So what he suggested is that this is a reflection of the amunah of the avos, that they understand that however life falls out, that's the way it's meant to be. And therefore, she's not thinking, well, really, I deserved, really, Rachel deserved to marry Yaakov, and it's only because it was switched that it was Leah. The metzias was that Leah married him first. So that's the reality, and that's meant to be there for a reason. And there's no cheshbon of, well, had it happened the way it was supposed to happen, it would have been the other way around. Okay, so in any event, so a child is born from this. And that is Yisachar. So that's what we find the next few psukim, the three psukim in a row. So it reads, Vayavo Yaakov menasada be'er, v'teitze le'el akraso, v'atomra elai tavo, ki sachar sachartiha, v'tudoi b'ni, v'yishka v'ima b'lai lehu. V'yishma Elohim elea, v'tar v'teile le'yakov ben chamishi, v'atomra le'ya nason Elohim sachari, asher nasati shifchasili ishi, v'tikra shmo Yisachar. So here the name Yisachar, which is always an anomaly about how exactly it should be spelled, how exactly it should be pronounced. It has the double shin, and we usually pronounce it with one shin. It's a whole discussion. Rav Schwab has a comment over here that the two shins, so he understands that it represents that we have the language of schar twice in these psukim. That first she says, ki sachar sachartikha, and then she says, when actually naming him, that Nasan Elkim Sukhari. So it's two different usages. One, so to speak, I hired you, I rented you out, and God gave me my reward. So altogether, they're a reference to the hishtadlis that she had in order to, that she expressed, in order to have children that should be the Shvatim of Israel. So that deserves recognition, and that deserves reward. But the aspect of this whole exchange over here, which kind of has a very intimate implication. So that's something that really should be more sanua, that really should be more hidden. So it suggests that therefore the two shins represent the two languages of schar, but only one of them is pronounced because the more personal one should be more sanua, should not be spoken.
Which one is the more senior? The first one, the husband?
Yeah, you know, to say that she rented out her husband, so to speak. She hired him out. So that's a part of it. That's a part of the schar that she deserves because it's a shtadlis in order to have the shvatin. But it's not something that really should be advertised. So it's there in writing, the two shins together, but it's not pronounced. It's an interesting idea. Okay, and then she has another son, Vatara Leah, Vatele Ben Shishiliyakov, Vatomer Leah, Zvadani, Elohim Osi Zeved Tov, Hapam Yizbaleni Ishi, Hialati Lo Shishavanim, Vatikra Es Shmo Zvulun. So here we know that the idea of the Yisachar Zvulun partnership, which is really derived from a pasuk in Vayichi, and it's also bracha, when they mention the brachos of the Shvatim, so it's not really alluded to here, but here these two brothers born to the same mother in close succession it's come to symbolize a relationship between those who are involved in Torah directly and those who are involved in supporting Torah. And the notion that we have that there is an equal schar between the two, I was discussing in another class the other night, talking about priorities towards staka. So when we get involved in philanthropy, you get involved in giving donations, so there's different hagdaras. You know, sometimes you do it as straight out staka in the sense of mamon aniyim, people are poor, and then you have to prioritize how and why and when you decide to give who and how much and in what way. And sometimes donations that you make are not really begethered staka in the sense of mamon aniyim, but it's together, you can't do everything yourself, but things that are important to you that you can't do personally, you can at least have a chelek in by supporting. So a cause, somebody's involved in a project where they're doing something very important. So even if you can't do it yourself, you can support it, then you can bring it about. So therefore, the notion that we find here of Yisachar Zvulun, it's not stuck in that sense, it's the idea that in order for this Talmud Torah to happen, so we need somebody who can do it and somebody who can bring it about. And therefore, that's what this relationship represents. I remember Rashiv Karen Biavna, Chassadik Baruch of Goldberg, to tell us that was a big donor coming to visit the yeshiva. He said, just like if the Chazon Ish would visit the Talmud of Chazon Ish, just like if the Chazon Ish would visit the yeshiva, so everyone would come and greet him at the bus stop and they would dance him down to the front door. So too, a donor is also on the same madriga, somebody who makes the Torah possible. It's all different degrees, but to whatever degree a person makes the Torah possible. So then that's the notion that we have of this shutfus. And some of the Sfarim suggest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Padavka. You know, in general, we have a discussion, we'll see a little bit here, of the lopsided nature of how Leah has most of the kids here, or as many kids as every other mother to the Shvatim. She has six. And a part of it is that Yisachar and Zvulun, we want that they should share the same mother, that the relationship between the two should be one of total ahava and total identification, shouldn't be any kind of distance. So that's a part of the hashkafi here, that Yisachar and Zvulun should be of the same mother. So this next pasuk, so there is a fascinating discussion. You'd be a little bit surprised to know just how much halacha lemaisa is discussed about this next pasuk. The next pasuk says, "V'achri yolda bas v'atikra es shema Dina." So then Leah had a girl, and she called the girl Dina. So what's pshat on that? So the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos and Daf Samach that she did a din, she did a calculation, and she was originally going to have a boy. But then she realized if she's going to have a boy, so she's going to have now seven boys. And if there's only going to be 12 shvatim, and the shvachos are going to already have four, so it means it's only going to leave one for Rachel. So she didn't think that was fair, and that she'd be in a lower madriga than the shvachos. So she was mispalel that there should be a change. So the way the change took place, there's a difference between the way the Gemara implies and the way it's brought in some later Sfarim, such as the Targum Yonasan and Ben Uzziel, and later the Panech Raza, which was one of the Baliatosos, that in the Gemara it sounds like essentially there was a change in gender, that she was carrying a boy, and the boy turned into a girl. So that has a relevance. The Gemara Masechet Brachos that quotes it is talking about the concept of Tfilas Shav. That Mishnah, the ninth parak, talks about the idea of a tefillah that's considered to be useless, so to speak, that if something is already decided, if you hear a fire engine, you hear an alarm, and you try to be mispallel that it's not your house, so the notion is that's considered to be a tefillah shav, because it's already b'metzius, whatever is going on, so there's no point, and it's already out in the open, so there's no point in davening that something that already is should be something else. So the Gemara has a discussion, and later we have a discussion about what's in that category, what's not in that category. So the Gemara talks about, so let's say somebody is pregnant, or somebody's wife is pregnant, and he wants to pray, or she wants to pray, that the Uber should be one gender or the other. So they want a boy, they want a girl, whichever way it is, so they want to dive into that. And let's say it's later in the pregnancy, after the first month, let's assume, that the first 40 days, maybe there's no actual gender yet, and then after that, it's already kavua. So to be mispalel at that point, the Gemara suggests, is a tefillah shav, that there's no point in davening about something that already is. So the Gemara asks from this, that apparently we have a tradition that happened, that there was a baby in Leah's stomach who was a boy, and she davened and turned it into a girl. So what does that show you? So the Gemara has two answers. Either that's Maisa Nisim and you can't use that to figure out normal halacha, or that maybe this was earlier, this was in the first 40 days, although it's hard to say like that, because then the whole point is if it's not kavua, so and the mashmos of the Gemara is that it was kavua and she switched it. But then on the other hand, you know, when exactly something is kavua is also a little bit of a question of perception. So the Gemara also says that in a bracha shari al davra sami manayin, that if something is concealed to human perception, even if it already exists in the world, but we can't perceive it, so then there's more room for Akash Baruch Hu to change it for good, so to speak. Because if we assume that Akash Baruch Hu does not lightly do nisim, that he doesn't bring about miracles without a real tzorach, so he doesn't change Derech HaTeva unless it's very necessary. So if you want something to be different, if you want something to be a certain way, so if human perception is that it's the opposite, so then it requires a nace for it to change. But if the human perception doesn't have one way or another, doesn't know which way it is, so then it doesn't require a nace for it to come out the way you want it. So that's what the Gemara has, the idea that in a bracha shari al davra sami min ha'ayin, that a bracha can have an impact on something that is not revealed, that something is not a davar hamadud, something that's not counted, something that's, if you don't know how much your crops are, so then there could be a nace that there'll be a lot more, and you won't necessarily have to rely on a nace nigla. If we know, if we count it already, we see that this is how much you have, and then you want a nace that it should triple, so then that would require a nace nigla. So that's not something that should be expected too easily. But if it's something that we don't know about, so then there's more room for that. So they have to figure out exactly how this fits in. So from the discussion of the Gemara, and Sashi Yerushalmi, and the Medrash, it sounds like that was what was happening, that the baby turned from a boy to a girl, and whatever halachic implications that has, that it's possible to pray for such a thing, that it's not possible to pray for such a thing. However that comes in, that's a discussion. Nowadays, you know, with IVF, there is some possibility of gender selection, of choosing what type of gender you want. And this Chazal is drawn on a little bit in this context also, where is the appropriateness of choosing one way or another. But there's a whole other halachic discussion, very other fascinating halachic discussion, that is premised on something else going on here, that the way the Yonas ben Uziel and the Paneach Raza understand it, that it was something else. It's not that the baby changed from a boy to a girl within Leah, but Leah was carrying a boy, and Rachel was carrying a girl. So there was a switch, that somehow there was a transfer between the two. So the boy that Rachel was the boy that Leah was carrying ended up going to Rachel, and the girl that Rachel was carrying ended up going to Leah, and that was Dinah. So that is invoked in the literature about ovarian transplants and ovarian donations, that if you have a baby that's the product of contributions from more than one woman, You have an ovary from one mother, and the actual birth takes place in another mother. So who is the mother halachically, which has major, major nafkaminas lahalacha, right? The question of erva, the question of yichus, is very, very significant nafkaminas. So this is a topic that the poskim discuss at great length. And many, such as the Tzitz Eliezer, draw on this version of the Chazal. Again, it's not the version that you have from the Gemara, it's an idea that you have really more in the later sources. So there is a beautiful article about this by my dear friend, Rabbi Dr. Eddie Reichman, in the journal Tradition from many years ago. He has an article about this. So he quotes an article by Rav Moshe Yosef Roth, who suggests that there's a raya from here that the donor mother is really the mother, because the Panei Achraza discusses that if we have a tradition that Shimon married Dina, so how could Shimon marry his sister? Right? How does that work? That's an erva. So you could say, all right, well, they had the halachos of Bnei Noach, and we discussed a few weeks ago, it also came up in a Revi a few weeks ago, talking about Avram and Sarah, right? The discussion where Avram says that Sarah is related to him, but only on his father's side. So by Bnei Noach, so it's not considered to be an erva on the father's side, it's only on the mother's side. So, all right, if that was the case, if Shimon and Dina were siblings only on the father's side, then fine, you could talk about it. But if they come from the same mother, they both come from Leah, so then it's really a full sister. So how could Shimon marry his sister? So he quotes this Panei Achraza that really was switched, and that it sounds like, in essence, that really the mother of Dina was really Rachel then. So he says, oh, you see from here that the donor mother, so to speak, that's the actual mother. So the donor of the ovary here, essentially you have a situation where Leah is the birth mother and Rachel is the donor mother. So you see that the fact that Shimon can marry her, it's really the donor mother. So as Rabbi Dr. Reichman points out, it's a little bit of a hard comparison to see medically what he's talking about, because this was not an ovary transplant, an ovary donation. This was a full fetal donation, basically. You assume there was a whole baby there that was taken and moved into Leah. So it's hard to know exactly how he can medayek that point. He then quotes from the Tshuvas Rabbaz, Rabbi Salal Safran, who does make the opposite point. He says that here you see that the Torah understands Dina to be the daughter of Leah, and that's because Leah was the birth mother. So that shows you that if there is some type of a shutfus between two women in the birth of a baby, so it's the mother who actually gives birth who's considered to be the mother, and therefore that's Leah in this case. It's a fascinating discussion. More recently, after his article, there's a sefer that came out called Siftei Shlomo. Siftei Shlomo and Simen Chav Beis and Parshas Vayetzeh. He has a whole discussion about this, about whether it's the mother of the conception, whether it's the mother who actually gives birth, who's considered the mother for the purposes of Yichus. And he goes through how this issue is relevant, how this statement in the Onus Menuzil is relevant. And he notes how various psukim could be quotes from Ravina Snipeshutz and the Chida and others, how there are various interpretations of psukim that seem to perhaps be understood based on this idea that Rachel was originally going to give birth to Dina, or Leah was originally going to give birth to Yosef, and there was a switch, and which one is the real mother, which one has the yichus, and how various statements in the Torah might be understood better based on looking at it one way or the other. Hi.
Chazal don't seem to be so bothered with them marrying their sisters, brothers and sisters. Like there's a medrash with twins marrying each other. So it doesn't seem like it, at least the Gemara was so bothered with
so in theory, even if the sisters are the same mother,
yeah, it's not twins being the same.
Right, yeah, it's something to figure out, right? But in any event, you know, there are other problems with this connection, as you pointed out. But if it has some contribution to the issue to say there were different mothers, so then figure out exactly how you're saying that one is the mother, one is not the mother. Okay, so. So it's an open shaila. It's not an easy question. It's Eliezer is a tshuva about this. You know, presumably, you know, with the nafkaminas for arayos, so if possible, you have to assume people be machmir for both, because the consequences are so weighty. And therefore either be machmir for both, or sometimes you hear that the donation should happen, you know, from some other side of the world or something like that, where it's very unlikely that anybody's ever going to meet the chances of, if you have a donor from Asia and you have a mother in America, the chances that they're going to end up marrying each other, although stranger things have happened. Right, so in terms of yichus, it depends what kind of yichus issues you have. But, you know,
if non-Jewish mother,
right, so that's also a part of the question. So then that has major nafkaminas too. So it's a little bit of a open debate. It's a debate that's happening in b'sman hazeh, so they don't really have a psak. It's a major issue which draws heavily on this, and not heavily, draws somewhat on this discussion. Maybe draws a little bit more heavily. You should definitely read Bar Eichmann's article, which is in Tradition a few years ago. He goes a very thorough job, Kidarko, of how all the later literature, what they drew upon. Gemara has more halachic discussions about the orla and about when you take from one tree and you graft onto another tree. So how old is the tree? What type of tree is it? So those Gemaras maybe are a little bit more strictly halachically relevant, but this is part of the challenge of contemporary medical ethics. You sometimes have to look very hard to find a comparable case. On the other hand, you know, that's also a part of the tremendous depth of the Torah, that you have these statements which by themselves you can't think if they're ever going to impact on anything, and then there are medical and scientific advances many centuries later where these statements have relevance, and then it becomes also a big shaila. So if it's an agadic source, to what extent should it be incorporated into such a discussion? Is it something that really has a role? Maybe the sources about Orla are more relevant. It's quite a fascinating discussion. Highly recommended. You should read Rabbi Reichman's article about it. I can't tell the exact source, but it's in Tradition going back a few years. If you search for it, you'll find it. It's online somewhere. So we'll just say a few words about the pasuk about Yosef. So here, the pasuk continues, Vatar vatelid bein vatomer asaf elokim es cherpasi. So she had so then Rachel becomes pregnant and she has a son, and she says, God has collected my busha, which we'll discuss in a second. Vatikresh mo Yosef lemor Yosef Hashem li ben acher. And she called him Yosef to say that God should give me another son. So what exactly is going on there with this name, Asaf Hashem es cherpasi? So the Ramban writes that it means that Asifa is a language like we find by a Ketzira. Asifa is the language of bringing things in, of gathering things in, and that she felt that people were talking about her on the outside. She felt that as the woman without children, so people were gossiping about her. So now everything that's outside will be brought back inside. There won't be talk about her. Things will be quieter. In general, the contrast here is a little bit surprising, because this idea of Asaf al-Kim es Cherpasi is, we'll discuss Rashi in a second, but it's different than what's said in the next pasuk of Yosef Hashem li ben acher, that God should give me another son. So there seems to be two different explanations of the name. So the Sefer Arvei Nachal, so he suggests that this is because there are two different tracks here, that the idea that she wants another son that has to do with her Ruach HaKodesh and her knowledge of how the Shvatim are going to work out and her desire to be a part of that. So that's her personal tefillah. That's something that she wants. But that's not what she told people in public. She's not going to say, "Hi, I'm a tzaddikus who has Ruach HaKodesh and I know the future, and therefore I'm cheshbening based on that." She couldn't say that at the bris. Right? So she says this other explanation of Asaf Hashem es cherpasi, and that's a way of kind of concealing what she's really thinking. In the Sefer that we just mentioned a few minutes ago, the Sifsei Shlomo, so he suggests that is based on this idea we were just talking about the switch. That the reason she was davening for another child is because really this child wasn't fully hers. This child came from Leah and was switched into her. So she would save the embarrassment of people knowing that because of the switch that happened behind the scenes. So Asaf Hashem es cherpasi, this wasn't public. But she also wanted a son that would be fully hers. So that's why she's davening that she should have another son, that the son shouldn't have this complex yichus and should be completely hers. It's interesting in general, this whole two tracks that you find between a name that you were thinking about and the name that you, the explanation that you're thinking about, an explanation that you actually say out loud. I heard once, listening to one of the shiurim by Reisman, by Yisrael Reisman, that he commented, he says, sometimes you have a situation where a couple has a baby, and there's pressure from the family that they should name the baby after a certain relative. And the couple doesn't really like this relative. They don't think the relative is a good role model for the child. They don't want to necessarily use this name for their child. They'll use this person as an inspiration for the child. But there's a lot of pressure from the family. It's going to be a big Shalom Bayis issue if they don't use the name. So sometimes the advice given is, you know, especially if it's a common name, so think of somebody else with that name who you do admire and have in mind to name after that person. And then you can tell everyone else that it was named after this relative who you would not have otherwise chosen in a Mipnei HaShalom, as we discussed a few weeks ago of a Mipnei HaShalom. So the issue of Mipnei HaShalom, okay, so we can handle that. But as he points out, so then people, whenever he gives this advice, people say, but Rabbi, does that work? Whatever it means to work, you know, does it work to say, all right, you have one person in mind and another one that you're telling people, does it work? So, you know, what it means to work in this area is a little bit in the air, but he had a raya from a Gemara that it works. It's very similar, it's not exactly the same point, that the Gemara says that when Reuven was born, so Leah said that Reuven, she named the boy Reuven because Re'eh ma bein b'ni le'bein ben chami, that you should see the difference between my son and my father-in-law's son, that my son Reuven is going to lose the birthright to Yosef and he'll be okay with it. And my Shver son, Esav, loses the birthright to Yaakov, and it drives him crazy. So you see how my son's better. So the problem is, the Pasuk says a different explanation. So what's Pshat? So he said that, you see, this is Pshat, that she had one explanation in mind why she named him this, but she couldn't say that at the bris, right? She couldn't get up and give a whole speech about how I know in Ruach HaKodesh that Reuven is better than his uncle Esav. It's not something you can say in public. So at the bris, she said something else, and that's what the Torah records. So it's you know, it's a more complicated proof, but here you seemingly have the same thing, that you have in two consecutive psukim. Without going to the Gemara, you have one thing that she said, and maybe one thing that she was thinking, and two different explanations in a row for how you get the name Yosef. So in any event, Rashi has an interpretation that seems to be very strange, in terms of Asaf Hashem Escher Pasi, what she said in public. So the Ramban says, okay, it saves me from embarrassment. The Rashi says that, yeah, you know, kids are good because when things go wrong, you can blame them on the kids. Right? You can say that it was the kids that did it. So, in the Sefer Som Derech, the Shiva Chevron, so he comments, it's very strange because, you know, that's really what she was happy about. You know, even in terms of what you say in public, you know, it's clear that she had more exalted goals for having children, and this is what you're going to cite as the ma'ala of having children. So, he discusses there that a part of Hakaras HaTov is that, you know, it's easy to focus on the big things, and then sometimes you neglect recognizing that the small things are also worth Hakaras HaTov. So he quotes from the Altar of Slobodka that every morning we say a bracha, the Hanosein L'Sech Vibina, who gives understanding to the chicken to know when it's day and when it's night. So it's not a good question why that's so important to make a bracha about, and he suggests that, you know, the fact that the human brain is able to do what it does, it's such a pella, it's such an amazing thing, so for sure we have to be makir tov for the fact that we can do that. But when you're focused only on the big things, so you could forget the small things are also amazing. So we take, so to speak, the smallest amount of bina that there is in the world, that there's even enough bina for a chicken to be able, for a rooster, to be able to tell the difference between night and day. That's the minimal shear of bina that exists in the world. And so we express Akar Satov, Takar Baruch, that even that much bina exists in the world. That's the important sentiment to express. And of course, the big things as well. So it's an important note to end on as we anticipate Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving is a day when we set aside a day for Hakaras HaTov, and not getting into the whole machlokas haposkim about the different ways to look at it, but certainly the Iker is a highly important principle, and the Yisod really of Kol HaTorah Kula. Some of the Rishonim write that without Hakaras HaTov, you don't have anything, you don't have the ability to really relate to any good in the world with any value if you don't have, you know, literally Hakar Satov doesn't mean expressions of gratitude. It means the recognizing of good, the recognizing that there's something different here between what could have been and what is, and the greater ability you have to distinguish and to recognize that this is better than what could have otherwise been, so then you can appreciate the Torah, then you can have a relationship with God. But if you have no Hakar Satov, so you don't have anything. So we're blessed to live in a free country, a Malchut Shel Chesed, that has given us many opportunities and made many things possible and does many wonderful things for the world. And we need to have Hakar Satov for that. So the recognition of the roots of Thanksgiving in that sense have their own value. But even aside from that, just the notion of focusing on Hakar Satov for a day, the idea that this midah really requires us sometimes to step outside our normal routine and to say that this is a bracha that we have, and anticipating Hanukkah, of course, Hanukkah is all about that as well. So last year was the once in history phenomenon when we had Hanukkah and Thanksgiving take place on the same day. Thanksgiving, right? Right, Thanksgiving, right? The proper term is. It's the first time and only time it's ever happened in history, so we won't be able to revisit that topic. But we still have Hanukkah on the horizon, and we're in Kislev, and so with Thanksgiving and Kislev, it's enough of a kesher. But the idea that we should take some time out to express a hodah, to express hakara, is a crucially important concept, and hopefully this extended weekend that we have should be used to good effect, and we should be able to fully have the hodah and hakar satov for all the brachos, big and small, that we have in our lives, and through that we should merit to have only more bracha and only more mazel. Alright, shkoyach. So we could try to...
That's also why it's the Sefer Vina.